Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo, where available.
This episode brought to you by the extreme folks over at GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show, it's the end of the year, and it's time to see how Linux did in 2010. We cover the best and the worst. Then we geek out over Debian's new toy and the new Humble Indie Bundle. All this week on the Linux Action Show! And welcome to the Linux Action Show, Season 14, Episode 9. My name is Brian, that guy is Chris.
Hey there, Brian!
My new Samsung Galaxy Tab runs Linux.
Well, you are showing off now.
Oh, I'm getting a little show-offy, but
you are showing off.
I literally just got this thing last night. In fact, if you're watching on the video version, just pulled off the peel.
The little protective plastic thing.
Yeah, the little thing that it comes with.
Wow, did you really? You waited to do that for the show?
I did.
That's your version of mine. You couldn't wait to unbox it for the show.
Right.
That's all you could commit to.
I unboxed it in the store, dude. Are you kidding?
Did you really?
Oh, yeah, you bet. I wanted to play with it all the way home. In fact, it's still on the first charge that I got from when I got it through. I got it through T-Mobile. I got a fantastic deal that they were offering. And
nice.
You know what? I'm really digging now. Maybe I'll save my thoughts for later when I've used it some more. But so far, like the form factor,
it feels good.
I like it. It's solid. It's got a good weight to it. 7 inches in one hand is nice. Plus, I'm typing like a mofo now with the two thumbs. I'm just
What's the resolution on that guy?
It's got like a 1024x600 screen. It's got a netbook resolution. Yeah.
Nice.
It's got 1024x768. It's got a gigahertz processor, 16 gigabytes of built-in storage or 32, and then it's got a micro SD slot, so you can pop some more in there. This one has a 3G modem. It does support HSPA and 802.11n. It's got Froyo on out of the box, which is nice.
Out of the box,
and
Froyo.
Added some stuff. Like if I pull this down, this up here, it's got like the option to control Wi-Fi, screen brightness, orientation lock, which is really nice. Is all right there. So I really
It came down.
There's a couple of things. There's a couple of things that they do. Like they've replaced the SN Exposé. Like they've replaced the calendar app.
I assumed I just crashed it.
But check this. So they replaced the calendar app, right? And that's really nice. But check out. See if I can pull this off.
All right, ready.
I installed a SIP program on here.
How does it work?
If you want to put your number in here, I can call you right now. And it calls out through Google Voice. So it makes a SIP connection to Google Voice and then calls out over my Samsung Tab. It's pretty nice. Or 3G over 3G or Wi-Fi.
That's awesome.
I can do SIP to SIP calls too, which with a free SIP Droid client. I'm going to make that one of my picks today. SIP Droid to SIP Droid. And if you're calling SIP Droid to SIP Droid, you can do video calls too with a front-facing camera and stuff like that. All free.
That's pretty epic good.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
So
that's awesome.
Good.
That's awesome. Now
I think some of the apps don't go full screen. Like I got a comic book reader app.
No, that's what I got to ask next. Yeah. Now after you play with it for a while, when we come back in the new year with the new episodes, I expect a full review of using this for reading comic books.
Oh, you bet! And I'm going to try ebooks on there and all that kind of stuff. So far, really happy with it.
Now, what's the battery life on that guy?
Well, I don't know yet. I've only had it for a little less than 24 hours, but I haven't charged it yet.
What's it supposed to be?
I think I've seen some pretty good stuff. Not quite, I think a lot of people, the average looked like about 8 hours.
That's not bad.
8-9 hours of heavy use. And I've, been using it quite a bit since I got it because I've been playing with it. A lot of the apps, go full screen and they look really good. But not all of them. You know what I mean? It definitely feels like the fastest Android device I've ever used. It feels pretty peppy. It's at least as fast as my Evo, maybe slightly faster.
Yeah. Honestly, the little bit I was playing around with it was really responsive and seemed pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. Android doesn't seem quite ready. Like when I'm moving the icons around, I have to. I have a really awkward. I can't move them tightly together because the grid layout is designed for a tighter
screen. Yeah.
So there are some things that you can tell. Like, oh yeah, they need to work on.
Do you know if they're going to be doing all the updates for the Tab?
I don't. I suspect.
Because that would be great if they, when 3.0 of Android comes out, if they could update to that.
I suspect. And that's kind of, my gut tells me yes, and that's kind of why I went with the Tab. Because I think they will. Oh, one last knock I'll just give it is they went with like a 30-pin style connector, like an iPod does. You know, so you have an Apple style connector on the bottom instead of using a mini USB, which all the other Android devices are using these days. And it's really nice because I have an Android phone, and it'd be nice to just use the same charger.
Nice little mini USB, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of a disappointment. Huh. One impressive thing was the sound quality. It's got stereo speakers coming out the bottom, and it sounds pretty darn good.
And it's got front and rear cameras.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
And with that SIP droid, I can actually use it, which is kind of nice.
That's pretty cool.
There's not much that ships with it that does use it. And you put Google Voice on here, you've got calling with SIP droid, you got text messaging. It seems to be like a really nice device.
That's pretty epic.
Yeah.
I dig it. We'll have to do a full-on review of that pretty quick here.
We'll see how it holds up. Now, I've got an Android pick besides, I think I mentioned in here, SIP droid a couple times. But I have another Android pick that I want to save. But first,
GoDaddy time.
GoDaddy.com
website. You can use it to have your own website. It's a website for having websites.
Yeah.
You can put a website there. You can name your website.
Pretty much top to bottom,
In fact, if you don't know what to name your website, what you can do is you can go to GoDaddy.com, close your eyes, hand down, keyboard palm. Try it, Chris.
Let's say...
Keyboard palm it. Boom. Why? Why.com.
Let's do another... There we go.
There we go. YSDF.
Oh, man. I kind of would like to have that, actually.
That's not a bad domain. Watch this.
It's kind of like roll
and
the dice.
There you go.
Wow. Now, see, that I could get yasdif.info. Now, that seems like that's going to be a
popular YSDF.info. GoDaddy just helped you name your website, and that's a free service that they provide that will allow you to pay them to get a website registration.
Another free service, if you are a small business, and you could be a sole proprietor, or you could be a 500-person company, or you could be a large enterprise, you can opt to have a personal GoDaddy support representative. Like, you call them up and be like, what's going on Fred? I'd like to transfer.
Yeah, you got your dedicated guy. Yeah, you're one person you talk to. That's pretty cool.
I have one of them call me up. He said, because I have to renew JupiterColony.com in February. He called me up and he said, hey, Chris, this is Fred. That's actually his name. He's going to give me a discount because he's my personal account manager.
That's awesome.
So go get yourself an LLC.
Yeah. Totally, totally awesome. And then type in Linux when you check out, 10% off your entire order, no matter what you order.
Yeah.
If GoDaddy sold socks, this would apply to socks.
I would really like GoDaddy.
Now, if you just type in Linux 2.0, that's 20% off, but only for the hosting.
Yeah.
So don't get all screwed up and what's what.
Right.
Linux, just Linux, would include socks if they sold socks. Linux 20, just hosting.
Being a video guy myself, Bob Parsons is the CEO and founder of GoDaddy.com, and he has a actually kind of funny and semi-business useful tips blog. It's sort of tongue-in-cheek, but it's fun. And you can go there, and he has a whole video series, and he's kind of an interesting character, and he generally has a lovely lady join him, which isn't too hard on the eyes either.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. I have that.
I love everything about that.
All right, Brian, I want to give you my epic Android pick. Now, I've covered actually, I think possibly, I don't actually recall. Another one that you get on your Android phone. And look at this. I'm rocking my big extended battery this week because I was using this.
So herkin.
It's like my tank, man. You get on here and you're like, okay, I'm heading there. And you bring up Glimpse. This is my pick. It's a program called Glimpse.
Ooh, Glimpse spelled with a Y.
Yeah, you bring up Glimpse. And then you type in a phone number or an email address of somebody that you want to send real-time location of where you're at. So like say... This is good for like when Dylan's napping and I want to let my wife know when I'm going to be home. I just now just send her a Glimpse. And if I send it to her email, she gets real-time HTML5, Google Map overlay of my progress, my current speed, all that stuff. Or I can send it to her phone and she gets like text updates via still image updates via a web page.
Huh.
It's really neat. And it tells you how many people are watching if you invite multiple people. So it gives you some sort of like almost live streaming type statistics, and you can fire off different kinds of things and have groups, and you can have different privacy settings. You can make a public, you can make a private. I always choose to go private. But it's a really nice kind of way to communicate either with a client maybe that you're running late, or a spouse or a friend. You know, like, hey,
that's kind of cool.
Hey, we're gonna meet at the IMAX to go see Tron. I'll glimpse you when we're getting close. That way you can see when we're almost there.
Yeah.
And you can be like, oh, they're pulling up the building. Maybe you're in the theater. You're gonna go out and meet them up. You know, right when they get there, you can go out. They walk up. It's cool. So Glimpse, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. What do you think?
That's actually pretty epic.
Not freaky?
No, freaky. Totally freaky.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually hate it in every fiber of my being,
sure.
But still pretty cool.
There was another one on the Android marketplace that got pulled for some sort of legal reason.
Uh-huh.
And I actually kind of preferred its UI a little better. Glimpse does have more features.
Yeah.
But I can never tell if I'm... Yeah, it's got some issues, but I'll tell you what. it is a really handy thing to have every now and then. And it's not always running. You turn it on and off.
Hey, let me ask you this, Chris.
Yeah.
How about just calling or texting someone saying, I'm getting close.
Yeah, I know.
Or I'm almost there.
You could.
Instead of, hey, follow this URL wherever you're at and open up a phone that has HTML5 support so you can get the Google Maps overlay, and hopefully your network is fast enough to be able to transfer both that and the Glimpse.
I do it by email, because then she gets the real time. If you do it by text message, it's just still.
But what? Why'd you say I'm almost there?
You could. This is more fun. It's very high tech.
I think it's very cool.
And then you add a little music to it, Brian. Like, you're watching the map. Dun, 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 dun. And the guy's moving around the map.
You know what? Actually, the best use I can think of it is if you were like, you know what today I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to rob a bank.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm going to do it really publicly. Yeah. And I'm going to be awesome and have the best high-speed chase ever. Hey, every reporter in CNN, Glimpse.
What if...
Take off.
What if we
just have like a million people watching you just barrel down Interstate 5?
When's our anniversary? Like June or July? What if we were having our 5-year anniversary meetup, and we decided to have this big meetup in Seattle, and we wanted to be fashionably late, and everybody there was equipped with Glimpse because they got iPhone.
They could watch
Android.
Us coming.
Yeah. And we could send everybody a Glimpse. Yeah,
we could like go downtown Seattle and say, oh, you know what? We're gonna like bar and restaurant hop.
Yeah.
And if you catch us late, we'll just Glimpse us, and you can see where we're at that time.
There you go. See.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's great for stalkers, so that should be perfect.
Super great for stalkers.
Yeah, fantastic. I can't think of anything better for stalkers.
I agree with you, sir.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, let's do the news.
Okay. What is new in the news this week?
All right, Brian, our top story on the news docket for this week. Debian announces an automated code analysis project. It's from a developer in the Debian project. It's one dude, I think. Raphael, I think, is his first name. And he's actually just kind of launching this, and he's kind of looking for input and some feedback and testing. But the goal is a scripted system of eventually, right now it's only two programs, but eventually a collection of possibly up to 20 different programs to audit and analyze the source code of the Debian package repo.
Mm-hmm.
So from a command line, and right now they say the CPU power to do it is too high, but there may be some efficiencies they can find. But from a command line SSH terminal to some server halfway across the world, one code maintainer could audit an entire repo of packages.
For some of the common problems.
Exactly.
Basically, it looks for a couple of specific common syntax issues and that sort of thing.
But, dude, why
it's
not?
It's a nice handy tool.
Yeah,
to have.
Why not go through and just get the low-hanging fruit, the dumb stuff that
most
we always go like, really, oh, that shouldn't
Most
ship.
Really big projects end up having something along these lines at some point, which is good.
Right.
It's good to have.
Now, I figured there's probably some tools out there that just include
Many.
With their
ridiculous amounts, yeah.
But for these guys, they don't have anything like this, and to be able to,
there are actually a couple out there.
Well, I kind of think of like something that's
geared towards Debian,
with the repos and does all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's nothing like that.
Yeah, but
not that I've seen.
But you could just take the source code from a package and run it through a standard tool.
Yeah,
but this is kind of a
neat
thing.
Yeah, this is cool. It kind of runs through everything.
And I wanted to cover it because I like to hear these interesting things that these different distributions do on the back end to make these distributions for us. And I think that's a neat little technology geeky thing. And they've launched it, and they're going to hopefully have a bunch more tools. I think it's neat.
I do, too.
All right, Brian. The next story on the news docket for this week. I'm curious to see what you have to say about this story.
I have nothing to say.
Really?
No, go ahead.
I'm pretty sure you have a lot to say this topic, actually. Richard Stallman has spoken out recently.
There he is.
Chrome OS
Video
and
version,
cloud
guys,
computing.
You got to watch it because that's ridiculous.
He says that Google's new cloud computing Chrome OS looks like a plan to push people into what he calls careless computing. That's his acronym. That's his take on cloud computing. But he makes kind of a compelling argument here, and I wanted to read a couple of choice quotes here from Stallman. He says, and this is a Richard Stallman quote, he says, I think that marketers like cloud computing because it's devoid of any substantive meaning. The term's meaning is not substance. It's attitude. Like, let any Tom, Dick, and Harry hold your data. Let any Tom, Dick, and Harry do your computing for you and control it. Perhaps the term careless computing would better suit it. Then he goes on to say, I suppose many people will continue moving towards careless computing because there there is a sucker born every minute. The U.S. government may try to encourage people to place their data where the U.S. government can seize it without showing a search warrant, rather than on their own property. Like, you know, obviously, to break going to
right.
somebody's house,
you have to.
But online is what he's saying. However, as long as enough of us continue keeping our data under our own control, we can still do so, protect from government searches. And we had better do so, or the option may disappear.
Well, okay, you gave two quotes there. The first quote was total bullcocky.
Yeah.
It was like it almost showed that he didn't understand what cloud computing is.
I agree.
I'm not a big fan of cloud computing, but that quote made it seem like he was just out of touch. The second quote is totally right.
How I feel about everything RMS says.
Yeah.
I usually feel like I agree with a lot of it, and I disagree with most of it. You know what I mean? Like, there's parts that I can really get behind in his statement there.
Yeah.
I totally agree that you have to be careful, and it is a major concern.
The root of what Stallman is saying here is totally, absolutely right.
Yeah.
He's just saying it in a way that makes him look like he doesn't understand
and
it.
And
I think he does understand it. I think it's just the way he's saying it.
Yeah, and we've kind of given Stallman a hard time in the past, and the Free Software Foundation in general, for sometimes tweaking the way you say things to make them sound worse. But would you almost say putting all of your information into a company like Google, who you know is using it for their purposes to generate revenue, and that's always going to be their final thing, isn't that a little careless?
It's totally careless.
So it is a little careless computing.
It is. I just really dislike the whole creating a new slang term for something. It's like digital restrictions management, you mean? And it's like, okay, while yes, technically DRM is, the whole point is to put both restrictions and management onto it.
Right.
Sure, that makes sense. I don't know.
I agree.
That just seems kind of cheesy to me. You know,
agree.
It's like listening to like political radio show hosts where they're always like making up words to describe people.
Good call.
You know, it's like
exactly what it's like.
It's like it kind of just makes you stop and go.
I don't like that. It bugs me.
You remember? So like back when Bill Clinton was president in the United States,
mm-hmm.
you know, we had Vice President Al Gore.
Right.
And you know, whether you like Al Gore or Bill Clinton, that doesn't matter. But a lot of the right wing radio hosts. And again, doesn't matter if you like right wing or left wing, doesn't matter. Used to refer to him as Prince Albert in a can.
Oh, okay.
Which is both dumb and makes them sound buffoonish. Because it's not that cool, and it's just them being kind of mean and playground bullying.
It makes them sound foolish because they sound like they think it was a clever thing to come up with.
Right. And it doesn't help further their cause.
No, because you're like, that wasn't that clever. That's fairly
right.
easy to come
even
up
if
with.
They were right. Even if Vice President Al Gore was the worst thing ever to happen to America, that what they've said doesn't help their cause. That's the problem that keeps coming up with Richard Stallman. Like in this case, he wasn't as bad as usually is, but he still had that a little bit in there.
Yeah.
He honestly, I agree with him.
So you know,
100%. I just dislike that he's saying it in the way he's saying it.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and it's interesting. I throw all these stories into my BuzzFeed, and there was a discussion in there that was pretty mixed. A lot of the folks in there thought he was completely off base. Like there was nothing to even be worried about. And some of the folks in there thought that he was dead on. Actually, I think there was only like one guy in there that thought he was totally dead on.
But. Well, so now here's the thing. Even if you don't look at cloud computing, let's just back up for a second.
Okay.
Even if you don't look at,
okay,
you just did that.
Yeah,
you just did the rewind backup for a second thingy. That was
I'm silly, Brian.
I don't know how to continue talking right now.
Oh. Did I make you lose your mojo?
You just did.
Oh, I got a better news story to move on.
No, wait, hold on.
I got a good.
Hold on a second.
All right.
Hold on a second. Let's get through this.
I'll put it back in my pocket. Hold on.
So here's the issue with totally cloud based computing.
All right.
You never are at a specific revision. So, like, we use Google Docs a lot here. They rev Google Docs fairly often.
True that.
And we don't know when they're revving it. So,
and it's happened. There's a feature break, yeah.
A lot where they break features and we'll lose data. Our documents will get screwed up. We'll lose access to documents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that Google did anything bad. The government didn't come in and seize anything.
There was a mistake.
No one did anything mean or shady at all.
No.
It's just that, well, they're revving the stuff and it's very volatile that way. Whereas if we'd had just, say, used gedit to edit our documents, we would not have had the issue unless we purposefully went ahead and updated our libraries or gedit.
Right. Which we would probably do, though.
What we would do. But when we did it, we would know when we did it.
Yeah.
We would see that we had a problem,
yeah.
and we would have the ability to
there
roll
a
back a version.
If we had to.
Yeah. So I like that for me is the bigger problem with cloud computing is you as a user don't have control over the revisions of the products you're using.
You know what? So you know the thing that sucks you in on Google Docs and that those sort of cloud computing is a lot of the collaborative features. But there are software packages out there like the Ubuntu project uses a project called Gobby, G-O-B-B-Y,
yep.
and that is an online collaborative text editor that stores the text files to your local hard drive.
Right.
And you can just point those in an Ubuntu one or Dropbox account.
And anything can read it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you still have a way to keep working. So that for me is a bigger problem. Like,
yeah.
sure, you know what? I love conspiracy theories. I love to think, oh my gosh, the government has some crazy conspiracy
right.
theory to have their greasy hands on the Jupiter Broadcasting's super secret documents about
right.
our notes for the Linux Action Show
yeah.
that 3 days later we actually post on our website
right.
in its entirety. So I love to think that there's a conspiracy around that.
Yeah.
But really, really, for me, it's just that I don't like to see my stuff break. And I like to be able to get at my data.
I hear you.
Yeah. So yeah. I get that.
All right. Let's talk about this next one. I'm going to take this one out of the pocket, Brian. Throw it on the screen because it's a pretty cool one.
All
I'm
right.
really excited to say.
It's no longer in the pocket.
The Novell Distors contest has announced their winners. And the winners are, well, actually, Brian Lundu.
Me. The winners are... Is me.
Yeah, you and what's the other gentleman's name?
That's Tommy Anderberg.
Yep.
Let's actually talk about what Tommy created real quick
right.
here. So Tommy created this really cool project called HyperGrid2Go, which is a SUSE Studio based. So it's open SUSE based distro that is an entire OpenSim server, which
oh, okay.
is awesome. It's a virtual reality server.
Sort of like Second Life.
Yes,
yeah.
exactly. It's like an open source Second Life-y sort of thing.
And,
server.
And this is the whole, you could create your own entire Second Life world
with this
just download of an image.
Just download this image, slap it up somewhere, and you know you're good to go.
That's a pretty good product.
Pretty rad, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's
yeah.
really neat. Cool
yeah.
guy.
And, you know what? If you scroll down, actually, some of the runners up were pretty awesome too.
On the first page, they
had some runners up like BrowserBox, which has 13 different web browsers in one distro. I mean, come on. Most of those web browsers are stuff you never want to install on your system.
Any other OS out there would get completely trashed just loading that many browsers.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
The really epic part about this is if you're testing out your websites, you don't even have to download BrowserBox's distro.
Oh.
All you have to do is get the SUSE Gallery account, click on it, click on the live test. It lets you live test it out for
right.
15 minutes.
Like in a VNC session or something, right?
Exactly. And it runs inside the web browser through a little Java thing and connects in there. So it's not super fast and peppy, but you can hop in, test all your websites out in 15 minutes on all these browsers, close it.
That's
you never
cool.
even had to download
That's
anything.
That's really nice.
I love that. Now, the really cool part is they have Safari and Internet Explorer and everything else set up to
yeah.
run in Wine correctly.
Oh, yeah. They got IE6,
super
7.
Cool. The Android browser. Everything.
So this would be a great way to try out a site on IE. If
yes.
Oh, that's so nice. And
yes.
they even have the Firefox mobile version.
And technically, you don't even have to download it. Now, I mean, you know, it'd be better if you do this a lot. But yeah, I just think that's really epic cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding.
And of course, what's nice is I also won.
You did. Congratulations to you.
So the Illumination Software Creation Station won for the best commercial category.
That's neat.
Because Illumination Software Creator is the bee's knees.
You download that guy and you're good to go. So what did you put in this to make it sort of a creation station?
No, it's basically just set up and ready to go out of the box.
With all the stuff you need.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing.
You loaded a few examples.
Yeah, some examples and some documentation and it's sitting there right on the desktop and it's all ready to rock and roll when you go. So
what's rad about it is I really like that you can get a USB flash drive, ISO image, an actual like DD
Yep.
raw image or a VM image,
yes.
just like right off, and they just build it and send it to you.
However you want to, yeah, however you want to use
really
it.
That's
really neat. So it's pretty cool.
Well, congratulations, dude.
I'm pretty pumped up. So the really cool thing is all sorts of press going on about Illumination going forward.
That's
so
cool.
We got is it in January's Linux Journal magazine? Pick up a copy when it's out. It'll be out fairly soon. Nice beefy review in that issue. If you want to support the B-Man and
check it out.
It's a good way to go. Anyway, I thought this was pretty
rad. I think it's neat that Novell did this because it is nice to just sort of encourage the community to go out and build these kind of things with their Linux distros. It is.
Yeah.
And it's good to also get some exposure to that build service because there's a lot of things like Mego and and a lot of different projects that are starting to switch over to use that. So it's good.
Yes.
To get it. And they gave out a little money too, which helps go back into the pockets of developers, which is really cool to sort of reinvest like that. And they put a video together too. You can go over to their site, and up on the top right, they've got a link to the video presentation that they
did. Yeah, they did a little like virtual awards ceremony.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. That's a lot of cool work they put into it. So you really gotta respect that they actually put some effort into it.
Yeah. No, it was pretty great. I this is the first year they've done the Distors Award, but they're saying it very clearly that they want to do this every year, annually about this time, is they want to have
really cool.
a yearly Distor Award. And honestly, I think it's awesome. I'm hopeful that a lot more people do this sort of thing next year so we can get a lot more of it.
Because
I use a couple of them from SUSE Gallery already in my day-to-day work.
I could see how that
could
be really handy for testing and stuff.
Super, super awesome.
Yeah. All right, now this next story is a good story to end the news docket on, and I'm real excited about it because it went really well last year, and now – or was it earlier this year?
The
Humble Indie Bundle version 2 is announced.
Beginning of the year.
And the great thing about the Humble Indie Bundle is you'll be able to pick up games for Linux.
100% cross-platform.
Yeah, DRM-free.
What Mac, Windows, and Linux for all games in the bundle.
And also, Brian, I'm sure you probably already noticed this, but like the last time the Humble Indie Bundle was going, despite the fact that there are more by a large percentage of Windows purchasers, on average, Linux users are paying $13 for the bundle. On average, Mac users are paying $8, and Windows users are paying $6. So, respect there to the Linux users for once again showing that.
And I would like to point out,
pay for good games.
Check out that graph. Scoot the thing over to the right a little bit so people can see that graph. Here is the graph of total revenue per platform.
Yeah,
Linux is crushing Mac OS X.
It is, yeah,
crushing it.
Yeah,
look at that.
That's pretty cool,
right there.
So we'll have a link to this in the show notes. You set your price.
Once again, this is proving. Again and again and again, that Linux is a viable platform for commercial software and commercial games.
Yeah, commercial games.
We are willing to pay. We are eager to pay. And when we do, we are smarter, so we have better jobs, so we earn more money, and we pay more for quality. If we see quality, we pay for it on the Linux world.
And we're willing to show that, too. Which
Mac users do not.
And
they
I think
see quality, they throw a dollar at you.
I think the
just look at the iPhone App Store.
I think
every app
that,
is 90 cents or whatever.
The thing that this shows as being the second time around is once again the Linux users are showing that they're willing to pay a little extra to say thank you. And I know I'm going to. I haven't bought it yet, but I'm going to this weekend after I get done with class.
Picked it up.
So I plan to give a little more for the Linux purchase.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There you go.
Plus, the really cool part about this. At least for me. So, one, it's documented. It's very, very open and documented, right? This is what we need for the Linux world.
Very public.
And two, Braid, which is a great game, is now available for Linux as part of the bundle launch.
Great game, yep.
So that's a great game.
Interesting,
awesome.
Too, because the developer originally said, I don't think I can make a Linux version.
Yep.
And
we actually covered that on the show a year ago.
Yeah, it was back in 2009 or 2008.
Yeah,
it was real, yeah. And so it's good now to see an actual Linux version. Here we are, you know.
It's great. Yeah. Now, of course, I've already played and beaten the game on an Xbox, but
now I have it
on my Linux desktop. It's sitting right there. I got an icon. I can double click that sucker and run it. I haven't yet because I've beaten it before.
But you could.
If you haven't beaten it, now you can play it on Linux and feel better about it.
All right, Brian. That's all the news for this week. Brian, it's the end of the year. It is the last Linux Action Show of 2010, man.
It is.
So we got to talk about what happened big in 2010.
We do. And there was actually a fair bit of pretty epic, huge things. And I want to start off with the big one. This is the huge one. Now, if you've been watching the show all year, you know this is the singular event that changed
2010.
The face of Linux in 2010. Now, if you go and check out the most recent release of Fedora,
you
know
14.
Exactly what I'm talking about. The number one new feature of the brand new release of Fedora, and this is what makes it happen. This is what changes it. JPEGs are now loaded
a little
faster than before.
Lib Turbo JPEG.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Now, when you've been sitting around in 2009 and you thought, man, I've got so many JPEGs.
Jordan C. points out in the chat room, and he's right. It is actually It's twice as fast now.
It's twice as fast?
Yeah, it's twice as fast, Brian.
All right, hold on. Hold on. Hey, you just hold on. Do his chest.
Okay.
All right. The JPEG is still trying to open, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm not using Fedora on this machine. Yeah, Wait for it. And now my 300 by 300 JPEG is open. It is difficult, this time we live in. So kudos to the Fedora team for making that happen.
All right, so let's talk about some of the other things that came up. These are really in no particular order. We were just chatting with the chat room on the live show, and we thought...
Yeah, let's talk about the stuff that's actually important.
Yeah. So I think next year, and we're going to save our predictions episode for the next episode when we come back, but I think Wayland is sort of a big deal that really started in 2010.
Yeah, it caught people's attentions. You know, distros started announcing that, hey, we're going to adopt Wayland in the future.
You've got Ubuntu. You've got all the ones that are associated with Ubuntu, plus Fedora saying, you know what? We're looking at Wayland. Not so bad.
Xorg going away. Yeah. Wayland coming in, taking over.
It could be the start of something big. And then sort of while we're still in the graphics area, I just wanted to give a shout out. Personal pet favorite is OpenCL support hit Linux in 2010. And I really think that once developers start writing towards it, a lot of things are going to get accelerated. And I would love to see some of the UI stuff in Linux get OpenCL accelerated. I'm excited about OpenCL.
Awesome.
And now we've got official support.
Official support.
Yeah.
Right. Awesome.
So this next one, no particular order, but I think it's kind of a big deal in 2010, the Ubuntu Software Center launch.
Yep. And more specifically, the ability to buy applications in the Ubuntu Software Center.
It's not totally game-changing for Linux. We did have Click and Run.
But
it's more adopted, accepted.
But you know, yeah, well, that's what it is. Nobody really used Click and Run all that much. I mean, I know it had some market share. I know people used it.
Yeah.
But not around here.
Right.
You know, people use Ubuntu. They use the Software Center now. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that my app, the Illumination Software Creator, is in there.
That helps too.
That's a game changer.
There you go.
Application number 7. Lucky number 7 in the Ubuntu Software Center in the store. So I'm just saying, maybe that's what's going to make it. I'm just saying.
Probably, Brian.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to also give a shout out to the SUSE Gallery.
The chat room's asking, I can buy Brian? Yes, in the Ubuntu Software Center.
Absolutely.
You can actually.
You bet.
Yeah, absolutely. Why wouldn't you be able to? One click. Well, it's not one click because Amazon has that patent. I think it's two clicks.
This might still be another thing that pays off more in 2011, but you cannot deny that it hit in 2010. And that's the SUSE Gallery and SUSE Build Service. Once MIGO launches, and I'm going to say I got a lot of thoughts around MIGO, and I'll save a couple of them for the predictions episode, but once MIGO launches, the build service is going to be an amazing critical component. And also, the SUSE distribution in general using this is going to continue to improve in a public way. I'm really excited about the future possibilities for all the distributions of Linux and all the different projects around there to use these. So I think it's great that it launched in 2010. Really
and with SUSE Studio for building Linux distros, like we had, I think we covered it about 2 or 3 years ago, there was a cool like web interface for building like Ubuntu kind of like repackaged live CDs where you can modify
it.
Yeah,
they generated you an ISO.
Yeah,
but it didn't
exactly.
have a lot of options.
It didn't have a lot of options. It wasn't really big. It wasn't huge.
Right.
Whereas the SUSE Studio, I mean, this is the first thing of its kind that's this epic. I mean, an average person can almost build their own distro, and that's pretty cool.
Boy, the chat room's already making predictions for the prediction show. I'll save some of those. Now, while we're still kind of in the Novell realm, we got to talk about the Novell rumors this year.
Yep.
We started the year talking about rumors of acquisitions, possibilities going to VMware, getting split up amongst multiple companies. Middle of the year, we started getting more rumors, but we were starting to hear, well, we think there's a patent deal that's holding it up.
Right.
I think that looks like that was probably the case.
That was the real.
I don't think anybody had called Attachmate.
No, and we were... I mean, the rumors we were thinking were right were the VMware ones. We were thinking, you know what? VMware is going to swoop in and purchase Novell. And we thought, that'll be interesting because then they'll put VMware on, you know, SLED or SUSE and put it out there as a thing. Didn't happen. Attachmate grabbed it.
Yeah.
Totally took us by surprise.
But it does make sense when you work through the logic of what Attachmate's business is with Unix mainframes and things like that. Interesting development. Going to be interesting to watch in 2011. We got to give a quick shout out because one of the chat room's favorite is the 200-line kernel patch.
Everybody likes to talk about that.
I know it, dude.
It's just a patch that makes things a little faster.
That happens
like every year. I know this one is significantly faster,
but it's a big one.
I love it. More patches that do that is better, but come on.
This is a 2010 thing, right? Moblin died.
Moblin and Mamo died in January of 2010. Right. So this is this really encompasses 2010.
So we had a Moblin death, a Mamo death, and we had the birth of Mego.
The birth of Mego, and but we still no for a while. Product. For a while, we didn't even know if when we would see Mego.
Right.
We thought, you know what? Maybe we won't see Mego for a long time.
I thought we would have seen it by now once things started rolling.
You were naysaying and everything, and we had January they announced it. Was it February?
I was not happy.
About that time frame, we had our first build of the tablet version and the netbook version of Mego.
Was that long ago?
Yeah.
There hasn't been a lot happening since then.
There's been a lot happening, but it hasn't been anything new, like big new devices shipping.
Oh, yeah, totally,
So now we've got handset Mego, we've got tablet Mego and netbook Mego. We're just waiting for devices to hit the market.
It's going
to
be big for Linux when
it's, it's going
to
be pretty cool.
I got some things to say. And now, in the same breath, you got to consider the stellar rise in popularity that Android saw this year. And that's huge for Linux because that's a lot of people that have Linux devices in their hands and pockets that are walking around as Linux users now. Just general consumers are running Linux. And they might not know it, but that eventually will become a known thing. And then that's going to really help the reputation for the operating system.
Indeed.
I'm liking that.
It's going to be huge.
What about Oracle buying Sun?
That's just weird.
Right?
It's still weird.
And it's sort of related to it, just the fall apart of the MySQL project, and to see really big sites like Facebook and Dig.com moving away from MySQL this year.
It's crazy.
It was a mass exodus of MySQL users going to things like Cassandra and other flat file systems.
Yep.
Really kind of an interesting thing because I got to say, when we started the Linux Action Show, MySQL was the darling of the internet.
Was king.
It was just having a meteoric rise.
It still kind of is.
Yeah,
but
totally.
I mean, MySQL kind of powers the internet right now in many ways. But
it's changing, though.
But things are changing.
Speaking of other things that fell apart that Oracle touched would be OpenOffice. We have the Libre.
Well, it's not really falling apart.
It's changing.
It's changing. LibreOffice
is forming into a new solid project, and OpenOffice is sort of
crumbling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's cool. But we've got the project, but that's a major change. So I expect, over the course of 2011, all those words that say OpenOffice.org are going to be disappearing from your distros.
Mandriva also kind of fell apart in 2010.
Dude, Mandriva totally fell apart in 2010.
Yeah. I mean, we had,
The company had some major problems
throughout the year. Major financial issues. They got purchased out, and they're still around. And
thank goodness.
And I'm hopeful they're going to be able to continue. It looks like it. I mean, they still have releases planned. They're still moving along. They've still got development team. There's some of the originals. Some of the remaining originals are gone now.
But
we'll see. Right?
We can hope. I mean, Mandriva and Mandrake are awesome. I mean, they've been around forever. I would hate to see them go away entirely.
I know. Now, these last couples that I thought were good ones that we picked out of the chat room and that we were kind of kicking around, and we said, should we include the Boxy Box? is that a big deal? It's, we don't know what the sales are, things like that. But you know what? I've bought my second Boxy Box.
So.
And I really like it.
They've sold at least two of them.
They've sold. They've got to be selling enough because there seems like there's a community building. There's a ton of apps hitting.
And you know what's crazy? So I have, on my Facebook, amongst people I know, just my friends, I have seen at least two people who are not Linux people but are nerds talking about and excited about getting their Boxy Box.
Cool.
And they know it's running Linux.
Yeah.
Like they look at it and they're like, I know that's running Linux.
Yeah.
And they want it and they think it's cool.
It's a really good Linux media center.
Yep.
And it just comes, if you can get the software and just load it on any Linux box, or you can get the hardware box for like $200 or whatever it is. And you just have this silent little dedicated Linux multimedia rig.
It's really cool. It's awesome.
So that hit in 2010, and I think it's going to be awesome in 2011. And I'm glad that Linux has a good contender in this space because you got the Apple TV, it's PlayStation 360, and also you've got the Google TV that are all doing this multimedia content.
Heck, even the Wii now can play Netflix Watch Now stuff.
Yeah. So to have a dedicated little Linux box that can do it
is pretty awesome.
Yeah, the little Linux box and hackable.
Super awesome.
You can SSH into that thing. You can get Samba. I mean, it's nice. And then the last one I want to talk about, because I think this is the most important thing out of everything else we can talk about.
Way, way the most important.
Linux adoption in schools and in general has increased, but the Linux adoption in schools has hit 5% now. And that was really Apple's secret sauce for a long time, was get Macs into the school, right? And once you start doing that, and the reason why I'm happy is 2010 showed a clear, strong growth.
It hit that
5%, and the trend line
month after month, small but steady growth, noticeable, taking away from Windows in schools, and that is awesome.
It is awesome.
That is awesome. And let's be clear.
It's totally
people will
sense.
Look at 5% and say, psh, 5%, that's nothing. However, have you any idea how many schools there are and how many kids are in all those schools?
And every
if
time,
you can get 5% of that, that is a huge, insane
there's
market.
There's a lot of market research out there that says that there's some key numbers that you need to hit to start the snowball effect of adoption.
Yep.
And that 5% mark and that continuing trend is right in
it's
line
right
where
there.
We need to be.
Yeah.
And it's while the growth isn't as accelerated as some people would have liked over the last years, you do see it increasing, and you wonder if it's all of the polish going into the desktop and getting these great applications on the Linux desktop. A lot of web apps now are removing a lot of barriers to entry for schools. I think this is a really positive thing.
Huge deal.
Huge thing for 2010.
Huge deal.
Now.
And I've got my predictions all lined up based upon a lot of that information and looking at those numbers for what's going to happen in 2011, but I'm not going to tell you.
Save them for next episode.
Until the first Sunday of 2011.
Yeah, so here's the thing, everyone. We're off next week because it's the holidays and we've got all kinds of crazy family stuff to do, but we'll be back on Sunday.
January 2nd.
January 2nd in 2011.
We will be back on January 2nd. We would do it January 1st, but we will be tired.
Well,
and that's not Sunday.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
I'm just saying, we want to do the predictions episode as early in 2011 as possible. We don't want to accidentally have all these predictions, wait until, say, January 10th. And they all came true that first week.
So join us.
That would be terrible.
Share your predictions with us. There's two ways we want you to do it. We're trying to be specific. That way we don't miss them. The best way would be to join the IRC chat room during the live show.
Yes.
Over at jupiterbroadcasting.com/live at 10 a.m. on Sunday, January 2nd. That would be probably the best way.
That would be a good idea.
Now, another great way, and we're going to ask you to do it this way, is go over to the Jupiter Broadcasting website and find this episode of Linux Action Show. And which was what? Season 14, episode 8?
Season 14, episode 9.
9, that's what it is, episode 9. Our predictions episode will be episode 10. So in the episode 9, in the comments on our Jupiter Broadcasting site, put your prediction down there, and then I'll go through before the show and collate them all and throw them in the doc so we make sure we get them covered. Because sometimes if they get Twittered or emailed or Jupiter Colonied and commented on YouTube and all different places, I lose them.
So we're going to do our predictions. Each of us are going to have our own predictions, and then we're going to do the viewers' predictions.
Yeah.
We're just going to read off like the top 10 or 20 or so, no matter how crazy they may seem. So who knows? Are people going to predict that Chris will shave his head except for one stripe down the middle?
How's that Linux related? I don't know. I'm just asking.
You are on the Linux Action Show.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And also, do not be afraid if you see someone else with your same prediction, go ahead and leave it because I'm going to use that to weight how popular that idea is. So don't shy away if you wanted to say, I'm going to shave my head and you see somebody else did it, you just go ahead and vote that.
I would like to just say something.
Okay,
this is unrelated to what we've been talking about.
Okay, lay it on me, sir.
We talked earlier about cloud computing.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a Google Doc open here.
You do.
I clicked my mouse once.
And
an entire line moved down.
Way down.
12 lines, not to where I clicked my mouse, but within a few lines of where I clicked my mouse.
How does that happen?
I have absolutely no idea.
That is, it happened on my screen too because it's real time.
Yep, because it's real time
so
and updated and saved. fantastic. Fantastic. Cloud computing for the win.
All right, Brian. That's our 2010 in review.
Gedit would never do that crap.
You're right.
That's what I'm saying. Gedit wins. And that brings us to the end of this week's broadcast again.
Yeah.
If you're not watching this live, you missed the fact that we tried to record this part, and then the internet exploded and said, no,
don't
record the end of the Linux Action Show today. So we're saying, no, internet. We slapped it around a little bit.
Yep.
Now we're recording it. Now it's the real one. Very, very fancy.
So we wanted to wrap up by saying the following. Just a reminder, we will not be back next week. We're taking the week off for the holidays. So we hope everyone has a great holiday or had a great holiday and enjoys the new year.
It's broken again.
I know, but I'm just going to let it go because I think we might be recording okay.
Is the recording all right?
I've got it. Let's just find out. Let's
shoot it. Holy Lord.
And if it doesn't, then we have one.
You know what? It's December, ladies and gentlemen.
I just want to be done with the
show
today.
It's cold outside. Let's just chalk it up to strange moon activity and whatnot.
Ryan, if you look at this right now, I have a totally see-through eye patch.
Dude, that's actually kind of awesome.
I know, right?
Except for there's words on it, I think.
Yeah, YubiKey.
Yeah, so that's the only thing that's not see-through is a white YubiKey. All right, so let's see. What do we got going on here?
Well, we're off next week, but we want your... Yes. Remember, we want your predictions, so go over to our show notes and put your comment in there for your predictions in 2011, and then join us on January 2nd for that show. And I think that was everything we had for this episode.
I think that's what we got. January 2nd is Sunday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. You guys got to be here. It's going to be a kind of a big show. It should be a ton of fun. It's going to be a little probably irreverent.
Irreverent, yeah.
I hope it's not irreverent.
I thought you were going to say erect, so that works too. All right, Brian. Well, thanks everyone for watching or listening to this episode of the Linux Action Show.
Yes, sir.
And we'll see you right back here in 2011.
You guys gotta know I'm torturing Chris on purpose right now, right? Chris is super hungry and he's got a sandwich in the other room waiting for him, but he can't go eat it until I finish this. All right, here we go. This week on the Linux Action Show. No, that wasn't right, Chris. Do you have any better ideas, Chris? Besides that one? Just normal?